Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Going from A to B is like a long-ass, mysterious journey with some good days and some bad days. But towards the end, like, you know, when I've done the work, and I find myself in these moments of like silent synergy, you know, where like I know what to do and I don't even want the music on or the audiobook on anymore. It's just like long stretches of silence where I'm out of the way. I think the work is for me to get out of the way.
I am so thrilled to welcome Vadi Turner to the Artist Mother Podcast. Vadi received a BFA and MFA from Boston University. She was awarded the Joan Mitchell Painters and Sculptors Grant in 2016, and her first solo museum exhibition, Tempest, was at the Frist Art Museum in 2017. Vadi's work is in the permanent collections of the Brooklyn Museum, 21C Hotel and Museum, Hunter Museum of American Art, Tennessee State Museum, among others. She's had an upcoming fellowship at Vermont Studio Center in 2021, and selected press features include Art Forum, The New York Times, Wallpaper Magazine, Elle Magazine, VanityFair.com, ArtNet.com, and many more. Vadi's represented by Geary in New York and Zeitgeist Gallery in Nashville, Tennessee, where she lives in Nashville with her partner and two kids. Vadi, thank you so much for being here. I'm so thrilled to talk to you today.
I am so thrilled you asked me to participate, and I'm really glad to be included. You've interviewed so many people who I follow and who I admire. And I feel like you also, we have so many people, we've been like one person removed, it seems, for like 2 years. So we were fated, but I appreciate you answering the call and asking me.
No, of course. I think about that, you know, because my connections kind of started in Nashville because I lived there for 7 years. And you know, the net of artist mothers is wide, but there's so many good ones in Nashville. I'm like, I just need to make the rounds and interview all of you from Nashville. So anyway,
I agree.
Anyway, yes, hopefully this year we'll get to meet in person. And I definitely have seen your work in person and have been floored by it. So I can't wait to hear you talk about it.
Oh, well, and thank you for the introduction. It always sounds so much better to hear it, well, from somebody else, but also like it puts the day that you're having in the studio in perspective when you're like, oh, I guess things aren't so bad.
Yes. No, they're not. They're great.
But anyway, but we all know that the day to day is like never quite as glossy as what you put in a bio.
Definitely.
And welcome back to you. You've had like a sabbatical from this like dark digital world we live in. I'm so happy for you.
I have. It's been so nice. You're my first like interview back. So hopefully I'm not too rusty.
Yeah, let's not screw it up.
No. I already love you, Vadi. Thank you so much. Okay. Tell me, let's go back pretty far back. And if you can think of something that you feel like happened in your childhood or just something about your childhood that connects to your life as an artist today, maybe where you draw inspiration for your work, or if you had a family member who was influential, who kind of pulled you along in the arts, like just wondering about that connection.
You know, I mean, I thought about this. I mean, to be honest, I don't think I was any more creative than the other kids, you know, when I was little. I mean, all kids, or most children, I should say, you know, they all connect with art making in some way. It's like a very common part of childhood and activities that you do in and out of school. And then art becomes an elective, and people like cease to exercise their visual communication skills. And, you know, you stick with math problem solving and, you know, word problem solving and expression, but art becomes a selective. And it was really when art became an elective and I sort of kept inserting myself into that class that the, you know, the floodgates opened. Mm-hmm. So it was really in high school when I realized that I was going to be an artist. And once it clicked, I really had no choice. There was no mm-hmm. like wavering or turning back. But to give credit where credit's due, I had a really special high school art teacher named Rosie Pascal. And, you know, she basically, you know, she really taught me that what was happening in the studio was a gateway for me to better engage with my other courses. Mm. And I was able to sort of, you know, I had this kind of like matrix moment. I mean, not to like overhype my GPA or anything, but like, you know, I kind of had this matrix moment. So I was like, oh my God, like I see how literature is a part of this. I see how science can be a part of this. All these things started to happen. And then I started to get really into school. So mm-hmm. I owe her a lot, and we're still quite close. We've had a really beautiful relationship as pen pals during the pandemic.
Oh,
so we've been writing
amazing.
Letters to each other. So, so I want to give her credit, and I'd say that's my answer about how I got to where I am. I mean,
yeah.
you just keep inserting you follow your interests, right? As we still right. do now with our work. And I think, you know, those, when you keep showing up in art related events or whatever, you know, path you choose, those stepping stones, you know, become a highway, you know, and you just keep going. So
I
hope
that.
It's a highway. Sometimes it feels like a dried up stream, but you know, it's still
but the stones
direction.
Are still there. Right.
That's right. That's right.
Body, where did you grow up? Like, where was this high school experience?
So I'm from Nashville.
Okay.
I grew up here, and then I left. I went to school in Boston, and then I lived in New York for 15 years, and then I moved back in 2014.
Okay, so your high school experience that you're talking about was in Nashville.
Indeed.
Awesome. Okay, cool. I just loved, like you even said, you know, the art teacher was talking to you about studio life. I took, you know, very limited high school art, and just, I don't know, that concept, the fact that there is a studio that you might have and you might have a life in it that connects to your life outside of it. I feel like that's, you know, obviously something I think about all the time now, but it felt like a new sort of concept because I don't know, as a high schooler, as like until you sort of live on your own, it's like your life is structured by people outside of you. So it's just really interesting to have your teacher kind of pushing you toward that. You can have a physical space that's your own and an inner world that connects to your outer world. And I don't know, I just find that little nugget kind of rich.
I think it's a beautiful way you described it. And it is such a luxury and a privilege to be introduced to that space. I mean, if that space works for you and whenever you get introduced to it, but it's funny, in this like small microcosm of madness for the people who really thrive in that studio environment, how totally bizarre it is from the outside. And when it works for you, it, mm-hmm. you know, there's no other place you'd rather be.
Mm.
And I think there's also something you said for like that nucleus, you know, that sort of like, if it's sort of like the atom where things start for you, you know, how it's like usually such a mess. Like it's kind mm-hmm. of a messy space. No matter how neat my studio is, it's still like inherently messy. But that enables you to engage with structure outside of it. And it helps you create a structure and a framework from which to, I mean, think with, create with, communicate with, verbalize, all the things kind of come from that messy nuclear space.
Mm, it's so true. Vadi, before we kind of dive into your work a little bit more, can you tell me a little bit more just about your personal life? You said you have two kids. I'm wondering how old they are. You know, like, are you working any other job or are you full-time artist? Kind of give me a visual of the sort of the structure and the parameters surrounding your life as an artist, and then we'll kind of dive into the art world a little more.
I'd love to, and nice of you to ask. So I'm a mother of two sons, Gray, who's closing in on being 9, and Vreeland, who's closing in on being 6.
Mm.
And I live with my husband and partner, Clay, in downtown Nashville. And then my studio is in the countryside in Gallatin, in my grandparents' house, actually, which, I mean, sounds kind of strange, but is very awesome if we were doing this in any sort of visual way. But I'm grateful for that. And then I have a lot of experience teaching, but I'm not teaching at the moment. The bulk of my teaching experience was at Pratt Institute in Brooklyn. And I taught there for about 10 years before we moved here.
Awesome. And were you kind of straddling the college professor and building up your own art career at that time?
Yes. Yeah. And it doesn't make me unique in any way.
It's just nice to hear because, you know, sometimes we forget about those 10 or 15 years that came before when we hear stories of full-time artists, right?
Yeah. And I'm smiling thinking about it, but man, it was a push. I mean, you know, it was like a pretty threadbare time. But having said that, like it was the dream, you know, to get to do this as difficult as it is, you know, it is such a, it's such a gift, you know, and it's something I'm really grateful for. And I really love teaching and I really loved teaching specifically at Pratt. So I'm grateful for that experience too.
Mm. Have you always had your studio in your grandparents' house?
Well, no, not at all. But I mean, my first, I guess, proper studio, I had three different studios in New York. And then ever since I moved back here,
that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, I didn't really, you know, my grandparents have passed. So my mom and I share the house. So I sort of get more space than I did when they were living here, understandably.
Okay.
But I'm grateful to keep it active and keep it creative. And the kids certainly do that. So yeah, it's a wonderful place.
Yeah. And what a cool thing to kind of keep, you know, this legacy of land and place sort of embedded in your family and in your studio practice in a way that you know, just helps you remain connected to their legacy. I think that's really nice.
It's free.
And it's free. Yeah.
There's that.
And I don't remember where I heard this. If I had read an interview or saw a video of you talking about your practice, but it isn't the land and like that land pretty, like, don't you do some studio rituals and stuff like, maybe it's a piece that I saw at Zeitgeist where did you have a bonfire and you had like charred wood in the piece?
I do all sorts of crazy stuff out here. I mean, thank God it's like pretty secluded. But these burn piles that my mom they're brilliant, but she sort of just like creates them haphazardly by throwing branches, you know, behind her back. But they are a really inspiring sort of shape and place on this property that's kind of lingered into my work and ashes in general and sort of rites of passage of like merging with the landscape in different ways at different times of your life are of great interest to me. So, but yeah, I definitely collect a lot of like burnt bits after these fires diminish. And I've done that in some bodies of work.
Okay. And maybe we'll get back to that. Mm-hmm. Okay. So describe your work for somebody who's never seen it. Like if you were walking into an elevator and somebody asks you what you do and you say you're an artist and they're like, oh, what kind of art do you make? What would you say?
Okay. I love that you brought the elevator in. So actually I'm going to digress for a second. I was thinking about, you know, just in big picture in life, how you define success.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I've thought about this a lot because there are lots of different ways you can look at it as an artist, as you well know. But, I think for me, if before I'm 70, if I can explain my work in less than 7 words, if I can like really get like a nice, like lean piece of meat to just deliver in 7 words, if this is what I do, and we don't even need a whole elevator ride, you could just go from the lobby to the second floor. That is a goal for me, but I'm not there yet. I have more than 7 words to talk about my work. I think instead of giving the elevator speech, you know, that's longer than 7 words for sure, I want to kind of start a different way and talk about like what I'm staring at right now.
Yes, please.
this doesn't describe all of my work, but right now I'm looking at a piece in process, and it's a dark, dark red window-like structure. It's basically a set of 2 squares that are on top of each other, and each square is really composed of a ruffled mass of curtains from my tween bedroom. Mm-hmm. So this is stuff, a lot of ruffles that my mom has kept. And I'm basically turning the curtains into the window. And if all goes well, and I got about 6 months to pull it off, the work is going to glow at night. Mm. And I'm working with a composer and it might even hiss at you.
What?
So I know, I'm very excited about the hissing. I mean, it's a little premature to say, but I think that that's the goal. So
will you have like a speaker embedded into it?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's going to be like way beyond my technical comfort zone. But so that's like the piece that's have information as we speak. And to back it up in a more general sense, my work transforms domestic materials into new forms, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So I collect scraps and used but retired pieces of bedding and curtains, as I mentioned, or I'll use structural elements from the home, like insulation and wood and cement. And then I manipulate these materials in lots of different ways. So, you know, sometimes it's wall work, sometimes it's vessels. You know, the work really kind of breathes back and forth from 2D to 3D. And I hope the space is in between. But the goal is to manipulate them so that they transcend their intended function, or they contradict their structural nature, or betray their any sort of traditional gender association they may have. Mm-hmm. And that's the big picture of what I do. And I think just going back to the newer work, I'm like really interested in the mess, like mm-hmm. the hot mess. And we were also talking about that sort of like incubated starting point of like this messy space that like is actually quite luminous. I mean, we were talking about reference to a studio space, but I'm like really into messy things and how there is light within a mess. And I want to sort of make a mess and like harness the energy of, I don't know, of something that is gloriously flawed. Mm. So I think that's my best synopsis of what big picture and what's on deck.
Great phrase, gloriously flawed. Tell me who you're kind of like, you started out your description of the piece there kind of referencing your tween curtains, I think uh-huh. you said. And yeah. I'm just curious about sort of that like conversation that you might be having with your tween self. And like, what are you kind of trying to say to that version of you through the work? And if you even consider your work kind of a conversation between yourself and different like phases of your past, but you talked about nostalgia and memory a little bit. So I'm assuming there's some of that there.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we're all like, I don't know how to activate the work unless I insert myself or something in my life, you know, that's mm-hmm. current. But I also, you know, my work isn't like all autobiographical, you know, I mean, right. I really want to speak to sort of like, you know, the greater feminine experience. And in thinking about this material, I mean, I don't have this all worked out. And I, again, I'm like embracing the mess, but I do think a lot about expectations for women. It could be for tweens. It could be certainly for moms or middle-aged mm-hmm. women, you know, where I pause to say, but where I am, but you know, I'm there or close. And what are the expectations? What's the look, you know, that is kind of the conventional wisdom of what we're supposed to be and how we're supposed to act. And then what is the behavioral expectation for these materials? You know, mm-hmm. what are curtains supposed to do? And what are these like tween frilly curtains? Like, why is that appropriate for this age? Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I say I want the materials to misbehave, you know, I say that for the sort of greater female character in that body of work as well. So these ruffles are now dark and they are going to glow at night and hiss at you. So I think mm-hmm. that's very different than the intention, that they were hung with in my room, you know, for this like blossoming young woman, you know, and also like, what's wrong with that? You know, mm-hmm. that they're going to take on some, you know, this totally other form. They become the window and, you know, they glow at night and they hiss when you get close. I mean, I just think that's, you know, the unexpected nature maybe of all these materials that mm-hmm. I want to give them the gift, the freedom to be able to do. I don't know. I mean, again, I'm still working this out.
Yeah. I love that. Tell me a little bit more about like kind of your work as it's transitioned. You were a working artist and professor in New York for 10 years, like juggling studio practice there. And then I'm just wondering, how long have you been in Nashville now? 6 or 7 years?
Yeah, so since 2014.
I'm just wondering sort of about that transformation of like moving from New York sort of back to childhood home and a very different location. And like, was there a big transition in your work during that time? Or maybe you could speak to some points of transition and how things have moved forward.
Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, I think like the real jostling, you know, just as this is the Artist Mother podcast, you know, I had to pack up my studio. I packed up my studio in Brooklyn when I got pregnant, and I really was sort of going through a dip professionally. You know, I didn't have a lot going on. I couldn't afford my studio rent, and I moved it into our small apartment. And I don't know. I think many artist mothers have said on this website, you know, it's really hard. Mm-hmm. You have all the time in the world and yet you can't do anything. And then you're like living with your studio at your fingertips, and it's, you know, hard to connect with for mysterious reasons. So then when I moved back home, I all of a sudden had a studio again, and I was in a different phase of motherhood. And so the work changed for that reason and for my, you know, geographic, you know, relocation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think before I packed up my Williamsburg studio, I was working on these storm systems made out of used clothing and bedding and a lot of ribbon, sort of thinking about how I could translate these materials into breaststrokes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my goals have changed a bit now, but I was trying to make these storm systems, these textile-based storm systems. But I was doing it in a windowless studio watching storm systems on YouTube, and I couldn't resolve the works. And I mean, I wonder why, like staring at your screen, looking at other people's footage. I mean, I don't know. And then when I got here and I could watch the storms, right. And, you know, I sort of had this wonderful like way to reconnect where I was like, oh God, I'm like in it, you know, and I'm actually like, I can interpret this on my own and see it with my own two eyes. So that was huge.
Amazing. Fadi, were you trained, like, is your MFA in painting?
Well, so no, I got my BA in painting and then my MFA in studio teaching. And at BU, they have a 5-year program where you can, you know, work to get them both. So that's what I did.
Okay. So tell me about like the materiality of your work being sort of quote unquote trained as a painter. But then, you know, I don't see a lot of paint in your work, as a lot of particularly female painters were working with themes of the domestic now, a lot of it is pushed towards, you know, materiality, and domestic based materials. So just like interested to hear you sort of kind of talk about some of the transition of, you know, just like a lot of your work is large scale and there's like a level of finesse to sort of all the ways that you're adhering work to each other. Just interested to hear you talk a little bit about your journey with like learning, you know, how to create a pool of resin where you're going to have like charred sticks and what will work and what won't. And, you know, just kind of your exploration into other materials that you seem to be using, because that door seems to have broken wide open, you know, in the past 6 or 7 years of your work. So could you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. And I'm smiling so big at the word finesse, and I'm going to keep it close to me, because when I go down there, I'm like, everything is so big and like hurty, you know, it's like, it hurts and I can't lift it. And like, when can I just make something that I can like, you know, manhandle on my own? But, I, you know, it's a really good question. And I studied painting and I do still use a lot of paint, although that's not the primary material. And I will forever be, for better or for worse, brainwashed into thinking everything's a painting. I mean, I think like somebody's outfit's a painting or a room is a painting or a film is a painting. And I think that's just the lens after you get brainwashed in art school. And I'm into it. I just, you know, I'm not a painter. I don't claim to be one, but I sort of, you know, forever I'm a painter. Right. because of my school, my collegiate experience. But, you know, when I left school, I wanted to take a break from painting, but I was also scared to death to quit working. I mean, I had one professor who told me that, like, you know, you're going to take, if anyone takes a long enough break from their practice, you're going to become a VARP and not an artist. And I mean, you should see us all like, what's a VARP? You know, it sounds terrible. And it's a visual arts related person. Now, there's nothing wrong with being a visual arts related person. We all like need lots of art lovers and administrators.
There is if you're an artist.
Well, I don't know. It's just like, oh my God. Like, I hope that's not me. So I was scared to quit, but I really needed to take a break from that particular medium. And so, you know, you kind of mentioned the floodgates. And so the floodgates are the, you know, opened with, I moved home and I started mining into my mother's house, specifically her kitchen and her bathroom, and making things, I don't know, terrible things, but important things that sort of got me from one material to the next. And then, yeah, I mean, you know, wax paper was sort of like a gateway drug, you know, once I could make, once I could manipulate that and learn how to make something commonplace into something, you know, how to turn the mundane into the ethereal or into the sculptural, like, you know, how to elevate it and change people, how people perceive it. You know, that was sort of, it was about the process of transforming or disassociating the material from its original function that is super exciting to me. And even though my materials have changed throughout the years, like that process is very consistent and still like really gets me going.
I love that. And I love the kind of the whole, this whole conversation about painting or not, but just this idea of, I don't know, spending time in your mom's kitchen, fiddling with wax paper while you maybe have a conversation with her, or, you know, and just like the manipulation of the, of material and using what's there rather than sort of this lineage of going out and finding the thing that doesn't already exist in your life and working, you know what I mean? Like kind of worming that into something that exists. I think there's, I don't know, just this different way of being able to relate to and frame something from letting go of some of those expectations and just sort of sitting with what you have and figuring out how to move from that, move out from that place.
I mean, no, I just want to say, I mean, absolutely. I mean, first of all, I hate expectations. I think they like really screw you up, right? Mm-hmm. And I think they screw up a work too when you have expectations. I mean, I know I want my stuff to light up and hiss now, but like, you know, the expectations, like they can't be so precious, right? Like, you know, it's a journey. I'm going from one place to the next. And, you know, and I think we're also limited by expectations and going through the motions and like fitting in the box. It's like kind of bringing back to the glory of the mess. But something I wanted to say about your practice, which I know we haven't talked about a lot, but I mean, you piece together scraps, right? You know, like you are forming larger and cohesive and like certainly varied, you know, works from, I mean, possibly with like fiddling from smaller things that are not part of a whole to begin with. Is that fair? I mean,
yeah, totally. And I just this past weekend, I just kind of had this revelation within my studio practice in talking to other artist mothers about my work. Because I was just saying that I, now that I've shifted in sort of a more collage based way of working, where I'm kind of taking this view of, you know, finding materials or collecting materials and then arranging them, I feel so good as opposed to a blank canvas, a blank palette, and just coming up with whatever it is I want to come up with. Like there's, and I realize like all points of an artist's, you know, creation, there is a sense of blank canvas, whether it's, whether you're working on a canvas or not. But I do think so much of that anxiety and fear that comes when I'm sitting in front of a blank canvas is about that like painting tradition and lineage that I just don't feel connected to. But when you throw in materiality and like domestic textiles and, you know, like, I don't know, like something random from my house, it's like, I feel comfortable there. And I, I feel like I can do something with it, you know?
Well, and you've worked hard enough that, like, you know, when you find a moment that feels really good, like, man, you know, that's like, that. Those are the moments where, you know, they don't come every day, but they feel so good when you are in them. So I'm happy for you.
That's a good moment. And that, like, that skill of like arrangement or collage or collection feels just different to me than, I don't know, like, here I am to create something new and, you know, gift it to the world.
But the weight of expectation on that blank canvas and like the history of painting, you know, I mean, that expectation is heavy.
Yeah, it is. I love this.
Well, I'm also, I mean, I think, you know, it's supposed to be hard. I mean, I don't want that to go without saying. And like, it's really supposed to be hard. And I know I'm not doing it right if I know what to do. I mean, you know, sometimes you do, but like you really have to like earn that moment.
Of course. And
you're supposed to make it difficult. And I think you're supposed to put yourself in places that you don't know where you're going to go. I mean, my work rarely looks like what I think I'm going to do when I start it. And, and God, let's just hope it's better. I don't know.
Right.
I mean,
yes, but I do think too, like there's something to be said for an artist who can recognize sort of how they work better. Right. Like I do think it should be hard. And like, there is this struggle to like create a good work, but I also don't think we should be like killing ourselves every day in the studio. You know, if you work better as a mixed media collage based artist and you can't really figure out how to get, you know, just a painting to come out of a blank canvas, then like, I don't know, like I want it to feel good, you know, I don't want it to be easy. I want there to be struggle, but I don't know. I guess I feel like that is a little bit part of that grad school mythology that it's gotta like, we gotta kill ourselves every day, you know? I want it to be pleasurable, you know?
I do. I mean, of course I do too, but I also think that, I also think everybody's different with how they approach it. I mean, for me, I'll sort of, you know, like I'm sniffing out my interests, which are like, you know, and then I kind of put myself in a corner and I don't know how to connect them. Mm-hmm. And I really have to figure that out.
Yes.
I mean, I'm speaking really generally, but like, I really have to figure that out. And I spend a lot of, you know, I'll sit, I'll sweep. I don't know how to connect this. I don't know where, you know, how to, I don't know where these ideas converge. And like, that's my job, you know, is to figure that out and to not execute an idea, which in my mind is like the worst thing you can do is to like, just execute the idea, just do what you said you were going to do. I mean, I think for any creative process or for me, you know, going from A to B is like a long ass mysterious journey with some good days and some bad days. But
yes,
towards the end, like, you know, when I've done the work, and I find myself in these moments of like silent synergy, you know, where like, I know what to do and I don't even want the music on or the audiobook on anymore. It's just like long stretches of silence where I'm out of the way. Mm-hmm. I think the work is for me to get out of the way and to transfer the inner and the cultural stimulus kind of like just to put it on that surface or, you know, or whatever it is. But I think that's like the payoff. So for me, it's not, I'm lucky and thankful to do it every day, but it's not easy every day. But like, man, when you get to the, you know, when you get to the promised land, it feels so good.
Yes. When you get sort of beyond the journey of the hard work of figuring it out. And then you're like, oh yeah, I can do this. Like I can stand back and have no idea how that piece sort of came from me, but here it is, world. Right.
Right.
That feels so good. Vadi, you mentioned that, you know, you kind of transitioned, as you transitioned from New York to Nashville, that was kind of about the time that you had, you know, your second kid, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, you know, again, about this word of transition and how, you know, just being a mom really changed the way that you think about, your life as an artist and the way that you structure your time. Just wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Wait, about how being a mom, would you say that again? I'm sorry.
Just how like your life as an artist before you kind of had studio practice in New York, teaching, you had two kids, and you mentioned going through sort of withdrawing from studio practice a little bit, and then you transitioned to Nashville and things really opened up. So I'm just curious about like specifically how motherhood really influenced your life as an artist.
I mean, it's such a good question. And I certainly like have an answer for that. I mean, I also think like motherhood changes your path as whatever career you are, right. You know, and like whatever career you have, or not even career, like how you choose to spend your time. I think that influences how you parent, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, sometimes my studio is like a great escape from all, you know, the nuts and bolts of parenting. And then sometimes there's like a really an aha moment or an overlap. I mean, it really depends, just because I think, I mean, as you all know, it's like once you get used to something with your children, everything changes. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what it's like in the studio too, because I probably dropped it. But I mean, for me, I think my artistic practice in the past like year or two has really helped how I want to be as a parent when I think about editing. I know this is weird, but the act of editing in the studio for me is really important and really, really hard because I'm trying to say as much as possible with as few elements as possible. To say as much with as little as I can, as much as possible with as little as I can. And to have the confidence to say this is enough. Mm. Like, you know, I think my next show might just be one color. Like I'm really trying.
I was
going to
say, I can definitely see that in your palette. Like,
right. I know. Yeah. It went from being so varied to like, I'm really, really trying to just narrow down and like focus on certain forms and certain colors and see, you know, what I can do with that and how much I can get those things to speak. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot about editing and how it's so hard to keep things simple, right? But sort of like that, you know, 7-word artist statement that I dream about, like, you know, I really want to deliver, like I want to trim the fat and deliver this like nice little piece of meat. And then I feel like with my kids, I really want to resist the urge to over-decorate, over-schedule, over-explain, over-indulge. Like if I can actually say, this is the moment, this is what's happening, or we're just going to stay here and do this simple thing that like, you know, I think that might be at this stage more enriching for them than me, you know, adding a bunch of bells and whistles everywhere. So I say this to myself, I mean, I'm not acing it all the time, but I want to try and keep the world simple as long as I can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, and be truthful about the complications as well. But like, I really struggle with how busy kids are.
Yes.
And how busy like screen life is. And while they're young, I'm trying my best to keep that at bay without having them be removed from how we live.
Mm. I like that too. And obviously it speaks to sort of just as a society, like what we've been going through with like paring so much down, you know, during the pandemic and really thinking about like, okay, what are the essentials? Like what do we really need to sort of, you know, live in this world of like chaos and pandemic and I don't know. Like, I feel like that conversation for me, it does just come out of motherhood. I think because of the constant change with like kids growing, you know, you're kind of reevaluating sort of what systems like work for your family all the time. But then I think the pandemic really like, okay, really, what do we really need? Like what, I don't know, like that idea of editing has been on my mind too. And I think probably for a lot of us, it's just, it feels like a contemporary thing to be really reflecting on.
Yeah. You know, life became so simple, but also we became so much more connected to our devices, you know, mm-hmm. during the pandemic, because that became like the learning tool, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, and I think for all of us, for artists in particular, that was how we stayed connected and shared, you know, what we were making. And I think it's wonderful in that sense. It's just really hard to put it down. And mm-hmm. I think that's really, that makes me really uncomfortable for.
I have a 9-year-old son too. And I just, I feel like that's such a great age. Like, so I have a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old and a 9-year-old. And I don't know, there's just something about that 9-year-old. I mean, my kid, you know, is a great kid, but just, I just feel like that age is just really hitting me recently. Like it just feels, not because he's my oldest, but just, it's like you can see that he's kind of in between phases, you know?
Yeah.
Like he's not quite preteen into that world, but also not quite, you know, like his younger siblings where he just has this reckless abandon and is kind of more carefree. Like there's, I don't know, something about that age that just feels so special.
I agree. They really have, you know, it's an important time in their childhood, but they're also, you know, looking, I mean, you know, my 8-year-old knows how to roll his eyes mm-hmm. at me, and he also will still play in the dirt. And the mm-hmm. fact that the dirt is still enough is something I really want to prioritize while we can.
Yeah. I've just been thinking about that a lot. So anytime I hear of another mom who has about a 9-year-old, I'm like, oh, is it just me? Or is that like that age? No,
it's a sweet age for sure.
All right. A couple more questions, Vadi, before we wrap up. You talked in the beginning, we started talking about, you know, success. And I am wondering how you would define success as it relates to sort of your art practice and your life as an artist.
I mean, I really mean it. Having a minimal statement, like to have such a like a deep understanding of what you're doing, I think mm-hmm. is something to aspire to. I mean, I'm grateful for what I have. I always, you know, want the next thing. You know, I think that's true for all of us, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know where the money is. That'd be nice. but I guess, you know, I think really the best way to answer this, and it's true. It's like, it's about the connectivity. And I feel the same way about motherhood. Like this isn't, being an artist doesn't make me special. You know, being a mom doesn't make me special, but it's something that so many people do. And it's like, and connecting with people who are doing it differently and doing it better. I mean, I think that's the gift, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably like the success that's there under your nose when you're on Instagram feeling jealous that somebody got this and you didn't. But like, that's always there for you on a daily basis. And I guess like instead of aspiring to something in 20 years, it's good to feel like that moment of success, you know, is really at your fingertips.
I like that. Okay. Who is Vadi and what does Vadi need when you have sort of the artist hat off and you have the mother hat off? Like kind of what do you do to really connect with just who you are as a person?
Who am I without those hats? I'm naked. I need to walk. I mean, I will take a walk or take a swim, you know, if the season's right. And for me to have that sort of quiet meditative space is really important to my, you know, my inner self.
Mm-hmm. Is there a space for you to walk at your grandparents, like at your studio?
There is, but I'll find one anywhere. But yeah, I just kind of, I need to do that. What about you? What do you do when
walking,
you're not wearing those hats?
Yeah. Definitely like moving my body in a way that, I don't know, just invites breath, is really, really important to me. Yeah. And I love walking. Like I do running and biking and stuff for cardio, but a really good long meditative walk is probably my favorite way to like recenter and connect with myself.
Yeah.
Sure. Or like taking myself out to eat.
Mm.
You know, like just sitting with a meal that I really enjoy. And I don't know, I guess it's about like physical nourishment a little bit for me. That's how I feel like I recenter and connect with myself.
Yeah.
Okay. Interested to know if you could share like a moment or two kind of that pop into your head, art career related, that you were super proud of yourself.
That's such a nice question. I think, you know, I think for me, like being in your 40s is really, has been a really interesting time. I mean, I think people, I hope can say that about any time age that they're in, but I guess a couple of years ago made a, I made a bracelet with little letter beads that says, fuck everybody. And when I go into the studio and I really need to just not answer, you know, all the fears and all the voices and worry about the judgment and the things, I can like put this bracelet on and just like let it go. And on a personal level, that felt really good. And I totally still wear them on days where you just need a little extra oomph.
I love that. I think a lot of us are going to be making a bracelet like that.
Yeah. Anyone can do it. Feels great. Highly recommend.
Okay. And a big goal that you're working on right now, like what's something that you're kind of just chewing on and tackling and you want to see maybe a goal that you want to meet in the next 6 months or a year?
Well, it's a really timely question just because my next show is in 6 months. So I'm, you know, I mean, I'm still really mulling over these concepts and, you know, I'm reading about things I don't fully understand at the moment, which is really interesting and kind of scary. You know, for example, I'm reading about the ionosphere and, you know, the space where ions, which are molecules and atoms that are somehow out of balance, you know, when there's an atmosphere that has a large amount of ions, how that space is a conduit for electricity and sound waves. This is a space I've never explored, but it also kind of brings me back to that like hot mess, right? And how this like imbalance or this oversaturation of something like is actually like a way to create light. And so I feel a little over my head, as the ionosphere is also over our heads, but I like being a little nervous about how to digest that. And then, and God, I don't know, you know, you could put this out in the world and I could totally change tact. And I find great comfort in the fact that I actually have time if I needed to, but, yeah, I'm like a little scared of that and interested in a good way. And then, and as I mentioned before, for the first time, I want to engage with light and sound. And so that's like a new space for me. So anyway, I don't know. I only live once, like, you know, well, I'll try and figure it out. I hope it's good.
I love it, Vadi. Thank you for sharing. Okay. 5 questions to wrap up the interview. These you can answer kind of as briefly as you'd like. They're just for us to get to know you a little bit better. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Who's your biggest art crush?
Changes a lot. Rashid Johnson and Harmony Hammond are a tie at the moment.
Okay. What is a favorite place to travel or a dream trip that you'd like to go on?
I really want to spend some time in Vietnam.
Ooh, good one. Love that. Okay. Film or book that has inspired you greatly?
Right now I'm reading Constellations. By David White, and it's all about these, it's like deep dives into everyday words. And it's been really a nice way to start the day to sort of like expand your mind.
David White?
Yes.
Yes.
Love so, yes, I'm into that. And then, a film I recently watched, I mean, I'm late to this, but I recently watched A Promising Young Woman, Carey Mulligan. And that was really intense and has certainly, you know, lingered in my mind.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. Favorite meal. Like what is your number one, this is what I want to have if I know it's my last day on earth meal.
Last day on earth meal. Easy. Oysters, French fries, and a Negroni or two.
You knew right away.
Well, I mean, and also it was my last meal. I might have three, but yeah. I'm oysters and French fries when however I can get to them is my dream meal. And anyway.
Like, do you have to have them together, or you're just saying you love those two things?
I want them together. Ideally. Oh, I mean, you know, I'm happy either way, but yeah, I'd like them together. Last meal on earth, you get what you want, right?
You totally do. You totally
What's
do.
Yours?
Oh, probably pasta. Like penne alla vodka, you know, red wine, good, like fresh greens or something to go with it. But like handmade pasta, like tossed in the pan with the sauce, you know, like all that. It's got to be authentic, all that good stuff.
You have some supervision happen in your meal, I see.
I love good food. And it's almost dinner time. I'm getting hungry. Okay. And I always like to, you know, wrap up our time together just with the space for you to give a shout out to someone who supports you in your work.
Two important women in my world of work are Poppy and Dolly from Geary in New York. And I'm so glad you asked, because I want to give them a shout out just because Dolly in particular has, you know, she's really supported my work since 2012, since we met. And, you know, it's been an interesting journey. And like I said, my stuff is heavy. So I'm really thankful for her continued support. And also to Poppy, because, well, the three of us, you know, we really pulled off, and Brooke too, a show during a pandemic in New York, which was no small feat. And having Poppy's, I mean, she edited the show, you know, edited the work, curated the show. I'm really thankful to be on their team.
I love that. Thanks for sharing. And I know that's can be a hard one because there's so many people, but I think just calling out someone, you know, especially a woman or two who's given you support is just, and it's just an essential part of keeping this community wheel kind of churning. So thanks for doing that. Vadi, this has been so nice.
Thank you. I think with podcasts, it's like, you know, it is so generous of you to put this out there. And you've interviewed, like I said before, so many people that I admire, and I admire your work, and thank you for what you do.
Thank you.
For artist mothers out there.
Thank you.
That's wonderful.
So nice. And thank you for making fantastic work and being willing to talk about it and your journey. And last but not least, where can folks find you? Because we want to drive them, you know, to follow you on Instagram. You post some great stuff and good images of your work there.
Well, if I wear these hats well, I shouldn't be too hard to find, but, yes. I put it out there on Instagram, sometimes on Facebook. I've got a website and it's all my name. So Vadis Turner. And, if anybody goes out there looking, thank you.
Yes. All right. Thanks, Vadi.
Thank you. And good luck editing this and making it an hour, because we totally went there.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.